She is so incredibly powerful. She can travel at the speed of light. She can transform into any form of energy across the electromagnetic spectrum. But she often is very humble, is very focused on supporting people around her.
Like, there's one panel where literally she needs to go talk to her parents. So she goes through a TV screen and she's talking to her parents in her living room. And then, like, basically steps out of the TV.
Welcome to Women of Marvel. I'm writer Preeti Chibber, and I light up a room like Monica Rambeau because she can turn into light. Get it?
And I'm editor Ellie Pyle, and it's a good thing people are just listening to this because otherwise they'd be blinded by our brilliance on all wavelengths and spectrums. Last week, we discussed Captain Marvel and her global legion of fans. But there's been more than one character within the Marvel Universe who has taken up the name Captain Marvel, and one of them is Monica Rambeau.
Marvel Comics fans know Monica from the books, and MCU fans will remember her from Marvel Studios' WandaVision on Disney+, as well as Marvel Studios' Captain Marvel and the almost-out new movie, The Marvels.
But there's still so much more to know about her. She is one of the most powerful superheroes around.
In fact, she is so powerful that we need a third person to come help us out with this one.
Hey guys, thanks for inviting me.
Angelique, welcome back. I've missed you so much. So longtime listeners of the podcast will recognize you as a previous Women of Marvel host, but listeners of Marvel's Voices and This Week in Marvel already know you. But just in case anyone is tuning into this as their very first Marvel podcast, please introduce yourself.
Well, hi, Ellie and Preeti, longtime listener, first time caller.
I'm true.
Depends on how you define a call.
Correct. But hi, I'm Angelique Roche. As you said, Ellie, I host the podcasts. I'm also a writer. I'm one of the consulting editors of the Marvel's Voices anthology, which has been absolutely fantastic. I'm co-authoring a book coming out next year. My superhero is black, and you know, I'm a professional nerd and I really love it. And I have an opportunity to talk about the things that make people happy.
So as the certified official number one Monica Rambeau fan, give us a quick rundown. Who is Monica Rambeau, aka Photon?
Oh, when I tell you, Monica Rambeau, who was brought into the comics in 1982 in a Spider-Man annual number 16, is one of the greatest superheroes you will ever know. So she started off as a superhero before she even had powers, which is the greatest thing. So she started working. She was working for the New Orleans Harbor Patrol. She is the daughter of a firefighter and then a grandfather who obviously fought in the army, because basically what happens, she's fighting against the patriarchy, talking about she needs to get promoted. And in walks her grandfather's old friend, Professor St. Clair, and says he needs help with a dictator. And so she's like, yeah, I got this. I'm going to go help out with a dictator. Let's go get a boat. Boo what my boss says. So she goes out and, you know, in a very 1970s, 1980s way, distracts the people on this deep sea water drill rig that's drilling for extra dimensional energy. And of course, she goes in and she's doing her little thing. And then St. Clair, who just can't sit himself still, comes and messes everything up. The equipment gets shot. And then she gets like infused with this burst of extra dimensional energy. And without knowing, lands herself into a costume closet of Mardi Gras costumes, which I got to say, it was like the first thing was like, oh, you're just the greatest thing that's ever existed. Wow. My costume is from a Mardi Gras costume. And so she, being the altruistic person she is, she goes back and she saves everyone that's still alive on the rig. She's not like, oh, well, the baddies did something bad. They're going to blow up. Bye. She goes and saves everyone. And it's so cool because over the next couple of issues after the Spider-Man issue, because of course she goes to New York, she's looking for Mr. Fantastic, Reed Richards, and Reed's not there. And so she's like, oh, okay, ends up with the Avengers. The Avengers are like, oh my God, you're going to explode. And then Tony Stark is like, I'm smart, I'm going to fix it. And they do. Long story short, after that, like, she goes back and forth between New Orleans and, you know, New York. And the next time we meet her, she's doing like a test of her speed with Tony Stark. And they're like, she's faster than Quicksilver. And I'm like, yes, she is. Baddie. and becomes an Avengers in training. And then at a certain point, we have Janet Van Dyne go through all of this drama. And they're like, but who's going to lead us? Which is actually on a cover. And then Captain America being Captain America, you know, the guy who just like calls people like, yo, this dude's cool. And the Avengers are like, all right. They're cool. Starts to mentor Monica, and you see her saving children in caves, and she's doing all of these dope things. And, you know, Cap goes, hey, so what about you? Do you want to be the leader of the Avengers? And she's like, ooh. And I don't know about her, but in my head, I would be like, ooh, you want me to babysit? This is a lot. Like, you want me to babysit Thor? Have you met your friends? Anyway, so I say all this to say she becomes leader of the Avengers in 1982, which makes her not only the first Black woman Avenger, it also makes her the first African-American Avenger, because T'Challa is from Wakanda, but also the first Black leader of the Avenger, which is so dope. And for folks who go back and read Roger Stern's run on it, she was like a favorite regardless. Like, it didn't matter what race. She was just a good, amazing character. They went to space. They fought Galactus. She went to space by herself and was like fighting Thanos' goons. Like, she went toe to toe. She had arch nemesis. Like, plural. Nemesis. I think
Nemesis.
But I say that to say, like, her power literally is like, it's a light. Is it a wave? I can control it. Like, there's one panel where literally she needs to go talk to her parents. So she goes through a TV screen and she is talking to her parents in her living room. And then, like, basically steps out of the TV. It's like wild to me how cool her powers were. And then they start to evolve because it always was this concept that she could control all of it. And then we find out, oh no, she's light. And she has some of the coolest, like, nicknames, Lady of the Light, but she is now Photon. That was not short, but that's how much I love Monica, honestly. I could have gone on about the fact that she loses her powers, basically the metaphor for burnout in a comic book, and then comes back.
So I have no doubts that you could have gone on for hours and hours and hours, but I'm going to ask you to do a very hard thing, my friend. I'm going to ask you to do a very difficult thing right now.
All right.
You to narrow this down to a top five reasons that anyone who has just listened to your story and has fallen in love with Monica for the first time, or anyone who, shockingly, is not sold yet. What are your top five reasons that our listeners should love Monica Rambeau?
Okay, one, she's a really great friend, period. You just go back and check out her friendship with all of the women Avengers going up into like her run on the Mighty Avengers and all these other things. She even was like, Carol, you stole my name, but you know what? We're still friends. We're still cool. But also, we're friends. You should have told me first. Shout out to Kelly Sue DeConnick for understanding that needed to happen. Two, she's always going to be down for the community. Right. When you meet her in Dwayne McDuffie's Two Solos, like the first thing you see is her basically policing the city of New Orleans in a way like she saved someone's life. She really believes in the community. Also, shout out to Reginald Hudlin. Like when we meet her in his Black Panther line, like she and her father are helping people get to safety from Katrina. I think that's like something like she's really down for her community. Three, she's an amazing leader. Go read that Roger Stern line and see how many people they've beat during that Roger Stern line with her as a leader. Cosmic, intergalactic, is dope, is period. Number four, I gotta say, for those who don't know Monica, like, she's powerful. Like, she can decide to just fly into space. Like, just her body. Like, not on a ship. Like, she's flown into space on a ship, but she can just fly into, she's like, I'm just gonna go check the quadrant. Da-da-da-da-da-da, and fly into space. But just being able to, like, put yourself through TVs and phones and radios and just, like, transmute yourself into, like, a non-solid state. Like, how dope is that? And then number five, I think she's just very relatable, right? Like, we've seen her fight the Sons of the Serpent. We've seen her have relationships with folks like Blue Marvel. We've seen her have this amazing relationship with her family. Her mom and dad are, like, they nursed her back to health. And 5.2, I'm sorry, I had to put one more in. Even when she suffers from burnout and she, like, falls back as an Avengers reserve member and her powers dissipate, she's still bodybuilding and still working on being active and doing things. And that's when she gets her powers back, when she least expect it. And she's like faking it till she makes it to save people on a boat where she could have just been like, yeah, no, take the boat. I'm good. She's like, she's a real hero. And I love her for that. Yeah. Sorry. I needed like that 5.2.
I think we'll take it. I mean, just getting to listen to someone who knows the character so well and is so passionate. Like, obviously, just talk about Photon forever. Okay, so we've established that she is extremely powerful. She can literally turn into pure energy anywhere on the electromagnetic spectrum. But what does that mean?
Hey, Isabel, you're our producer and Ask an Expert correspondent. Do you have a scientist for us this week to help explain?
I actually think I can take this one on my own, if that's okay. I dug way back into my brain, back to my high school physics class, and here's what I remember. So electromagnetic waves are one of the ways that energy can travel. Stuff like radio waves, X-rays, sunlight, light in general, they're all actually types of waves. Where the spectrum part comes in is when we compare those waves to each other. The spectrum is the way that the electromagnetic waves are classified by their wavelength and frequencies. So on one end of that spectrum is higher energy, which is why they're dangerous. That's why we have to like wear, you know, those lead bibs that we wear when we get x-rays at the dentist. Mm-hmm. And it's also at that end of the spectrum that gamma rays live, which obviously turned Bruce Banner into the Hulk.
What?
I know. So that so end, you're saying that's the dangerous stuff.
I should go to the dentist just in case I get superpowers.
Yes. Exactly. I think if you don't wear the lead bib, you could get powers. Yeah, totally.
For legal purposes, that is a joke.
But meanwhile, at the other end of the spectrum, we have the super low energy waves. You know, we're basically all swimming in radio waves all the time, but unfortunately not turning green. And that's because those waves have very low energy. And then somewhere in the middle of the spectrum, we have like infrared, UV rays, and microwaves, and then the visible spectrum of regular light. That visible spectrum does not include microwaves, otherwise we'd be able to see what was happening in our microwaves while they're heating up our frozen dinner. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen.
Ew.
I know. If only. And then the only other thing that I think is relevant here that I actually remember is where Monica's name Photon comes from. You know, one of the mantles she's worn over the years. A photon is the name for a particle of light. So Monica's been called Photon. She's also used the name Spectrum, which obviously pops up here a lot as we were just talking about. But that's kind of all I remember. Shout out to Mr. Schmidt, my high school physics teacher, and my brother Ben, who's a scientist and fact-checked this for me. Yeah, that's all I got.
Well, that was perfect. Thank you, Isabel. So Monica has turned into radio waves, electricity, infrared energy, gamma energy, and even sunlight to kill vampires. Her powers have allowed her to create holograms, turn invisible, travel faster than light, and phase through solid structures, as well as the vacuum of space, as Angelique very excitedly told us, because it is awesome.
And that is just so much power, which you've also mentioned has been used at times as a metaphor for burnout when she's lost her powers. So trying to find a balance in all of that, if you had that much power, Angelique, how would you stay grounded?
Gumbo.
No, it's like a great answer.
I mean, really good food. I mean, in short, like, I think one way she stays grounded is definitely her community, right? Mm-hmm. Like, having Frank Rambo and Maria Rambo, two sweet, sweet, sweet old parents. She's from New Orleans, which is great because she's got New Orleans parents. She's got this New Orleans vibe. And, you know, for a person who I live in the city, I'm from Louisiana, New Orleans. It's just one of those places where you're always in community. It doesn't matter if you're famous. It doesn't matter. You know, that's why a lot of celebrities actually come and live in New Orleans, because folks are like, oh, okay, hey, Tom Cruise. And they just kind of keep walking. They're like, oh, you know, Angelina Jolie has a house that right down the street. Oh, that was Anthony Mackie's house when he was a kid. Him and his brother still own it. Like, it's just a very chill, big, small city. And I think having that and understanding that there are times when the city needs you is something that Monica really understands as a character. And like, shout out to the writers who really pull that through, because there's also been a strength in her relationships. Like, even when Monica is like coming back from losing all of her powers and she's become a bodybuilder, you know, she got her job through a friend who used to work on the Harbor Patrol with her. And so she's going to go do this with him. And, you know, she calls people to the mat. And so having that grounding in family, because as we know, it is very seldom that superheroes have parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's intentional, right? Because that connects her back to the city. You know, and we've even started seeing the introduction of other family members and cousins, which is a very New Orleans thing. It keeps her there. And she never is scared to get her hands dirty and to pay attention. Because one of the things with those powers is she can also hear and tap into radio waves. And so you see moments where she's actually listening to the police scanner. And she knows that even the smallest help makes a big impact.
That is all so true. And I particularly love what you said about how superheroes rarely have parents. And the fact that she has those family connections that we rarely see, I'm sure, is a huge part of what lets her still be a person, as it is for any of us. So I am so glad that you came to hang out with us today, Angelique. And I hope that you'll come back and join us again.
Please.
Anytime you want me.
Now, Monica's most recent comic, the 5-issue limited series Monica Rambeau Photon, saw her moving across space and through alternate universes. Writer Eve Ewing is here to fill us in.
Hi, thanks for having me. My name is Eve Ewing, and I was the writer on the solo Monica Rambeau Photon arc, and I've also written Ironheart and Champions. I'm writing Black Panther now, and I am a Gemini, and I like dogs.
So what drew you to writing Monica's story in particular?
So I have a privilege that a lot of comics writers don't have, which is that I have a regular job. I'm a professor at a university, which is cool. And I do a lot of other writing projects. And so what that means is I have the privilege of saying no to a lot of things. So there have been times when Marvel has come to me and said, hey, do you want to write this person or that person? And I never take on a character unless I really feel like I have something to add to their publication history, their story, and who they are. And in Monica's case, I was really drawn to her because I felt like I could relate to her, and like she was so relatable for so many Black women. In particular, I was struck over the course of her publication history. On the one hand, she's been around the Marvel Universe for such a long time, right? She's a legacy character. She's incredibly, incredibly powerful. But on the other hand, she had never had a storyline or a level of centrality that I felt was commensurate with the level of her power. And actually, one of her most important storylines involves her being the leader of the Avengers and then basically getting sabotaged and second-guessed into ultimately being depowered, both in terms of her own abilities and her leadership. And I just felt like there was something really relatable for Black women, for women of color, for women in general, really for anybody. But I think, you know, specifically for women of color, to think about that idea of being so incredibly powerful, but being pushed into a corner where you find yourself second guessing yourself and never quite having the chance to shine center stage. Monica is the ultimate team player, and it was really cool to have a chance to tell her story as kind of being the solo cast member.
So what was most important about her character or her story for you to bring forward in giving her that center stage moment?
I had a couple of tasks that were specifically handed to me by editorial. And I think that's always kind of fun and cool to have these like rules of engagement. So I was told, number one, this has to be just a Monica story, like can't be a team story, which I thought was perfect and kind of gelled with the things I was thinking about already. And number two, they said it would be really cool if you could clarify Monica's origin a little bit. And so for those who have had a chance to read the arc, and if you haven't, it's now available as a trade paperback, so you can get all of it in one go. So go check that out at your local independent bookstore, comic book shop, or digitally. But I got to throw a little curveball in there about Monica's origins that I won't spoil, but I had a lot of fun tossing that in there. And so that was kind of my marching orders. But for me, with any character, I'm always going into it by thinking, what are the questions that I have as a reader that I think readers should have about what we don't know about this person? And how do we write a story that gives them an external conflict, but also builds who they are internally? Mm-hmm. You know, I believe that writing on these series where, you know, we're working with characters that we're picking up from other people and then leaving for other people to work on, it's kind of like a campground, right? Like you're supposed to leave it better than you found it. And so I wanted to really build out Monica's internal world. And I wanted her to go on a journey where she really had to face some things about herself that perhaps she had never confronted before and grow internally as she also faced an external challenge.
So as you've mentioned, Monica is this crazy, powerful, multiverse-trotting character, but how does she succeed or fail at keeping herself grounded?
Yeah, I mean, the fun to me of superheroes is, this is not by any means a unique observation that I'm about to make. Many people have said it, but I'm about to be the latest person to say it, is we love Spider-Man because of Peter Parker, right? Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's always exciting to think about how do we keep our characters grounded. And I think it's extra spicy when you can find a way for the character's inner turmoil to be somehow like ironic or contradictory to their external abilities. And so, you know, for Monica, it's like she's almost a little bit too grounded. She is so incredibly powerful. She can travel at the speed of light. She can transform into any form of energy across the electromagnetic spectrum. But she often is very humble, is very focused on supporting people around her. And at a certain point, that becomes an excuse. It becomes a way for her to not confront her own power, a way for her to not confront the things about herself that maybe she doesn't understand or doesn't like. Also, I think something that's cool about her historically is before this run, it was already established that she has these parents that she's really close to, Frank and Maria Rambeau. And so, you know, showing a little bit of their family life, that's something that I also wanted to expand in this arc, and showing a little bit of, you know, New Orleans, her home city. She's also lived in New York at times. But, you know, the funny thing is, like, I wanted her to have those humble moments of being misrecognized, being misunderstood, feeling not listened to. She's maybe a little bit more grounded than she needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think that race and gender interact in a way where powerful Black women are told all the time that they are not that important, that they are not that powerful. This is kind of a silly story, but it's one that I think about all the time. I think about Oprah going into a store and asking about a purse and, you know, a shopkeeper implying that she wouldn't be able to afford it. You know, like, I think about more serious issues like very wealthy, very famous Black women like Serena Williams or Beyonce, you know, having issues with their medical care, having issues in childbirth. I think that for many Black women, there's no level of acclaim or accomplishment or power you can ever achieve where somebody isn't going to try to still make you feel small. And so I think it's less about feeling grounded per se and more about being grounded in yourself, right? Like remembering who you are, remembering why you're doing what you're doing, remembering the things about you that are powerful, that are out of this world. And I think that what happens with Monica is that she has been so grounded that she has forgotten how to soar, right? And so the job of this arc is to kind of get her back into the sky and to make her realize that when you don't figure that stuff out for yourself, when you are ill at ease with your own power, when you don't really understand, you know, where you stand with yourself, where you stand with the world, that that has an impact on other people. When you're as powerful as Monica, that has an impact on multiple planes of existence.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you have to do research into the science aspects of this in order to write Photon? What's your process in terms of approaching kind of these superpowered characters?
Yeah, I mean, did I have to? Probably not. Did I? Yes. something that people may not know about me is I actually used to be a middle school science teacher, and I love science. And I think that comics and fiction and graphica are one way of bringing themes of science to young people. And so, of course, the vast majority of the science that happens in the Marvel universe is very, very fake. But at the same time, I've been really privileged, you know, certainly getting my start by writing Ironheart, who is a Black teen girl scientist. It was very important to me that the science in that arc is at least grounded in some semblance of reality. And that's something that I carried over with Monica too. You know, everybody has their preferences and pet peeves in comics, but I kind of have a pet peeve of when the science or the technology in something is like so over the top fake, like when it's just not in any way, you know, when people are just kind of saying word soup, mm-hmm. That's not how I like to write. That can be fun for other people who are trying to just, you know, move quickly to the point of what's happening, which is the action. But a lot of the terms and the things that you see happening in terms of Monica's shifts across the electromagnetic spectrum, yeah, I do research to not just sound like I'm talking gibberish. And, you know, as I mentioned, I'm a professor now, so I'm a professional researcher. And for me, doing research is the first and one of the most fun and interesting prerequisites for writing any character. Because like I said, you know, you're picking up characters that may have a 5, 10, 20, 30, 40 year history. The question is, what is it that I as a writer am going to contribute? And mm-hmm. so that always begins with research. So with Monica, you know, I read through her entire publication history and, you know, all of her most important arcs, her most important moments. And I'm always asking myself, before I agree to write any character, I'm asking myself the same question, which is, what are the things about this character that I don't understand, that don't make sense, where there's a space for me to enter? And I'm asking myself that question as a reader, as a fan, putting that hat on. And if I feel like I can identify something where I'm like, okay, there's really this nagging thing that's unresolved in this person's character history, that's the space for me to then hopefully enter as a writer. And if not, I'm like, this is great. Sorry. Call me for the next one.
So anything you are working on now that you'd like to promote?
Absolutely. I'm so honored and still floored and flabbergasted to be writing the Black Panther ongoing right now. And so people should get out and check that out. And if you haven't already, it's never too late to jump on board. This is a brand new Black Panther run, and I've tried to make it accessible for, you know, folks that have been reading for a really long time and folks that are just jumping on board now. And so please head out to your local comic shop and add it to your pull list.
Where can people find you on social media if you want to be found?
People can find me hiding in a cave waiting for the ongoing apocalypse to, you know, come to an end. But other than that, you can follow me on Instagram at eve.ewing. My last name is E-W-I-N-G. And you can find my website, eveewing.com, where you can sign up for my newsletter and see other comics and books and stuff that I've written. And if you see me at a con or something like that, say hi. Unless if I'm in the bathroom. If I'm in the bathroom, don't say hi.
Never say hi to someone in the bathroom at a con. It's just not a thing that we do.
Please. No. It's just not cool. Just wait. Just wait 5 minutes.
Thank you so much, Eve, for coming on Women of Marvel today. We would love to have you come back anytime.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you so much.
So Eve's Photon Limited series was published in the winter of 2022, but back in January of 2021, Monica had her MCU debut in Marvel Studios' WandaVision on Disney+. That spring, we aired an episode of this podcast that included a ton of incredible interviews.
Yeah, you guys got to talk to head writer Jack Schaefer and actors Elizabeth Olsen, Catherine Hahn, and Tiona Paris. I am super jealous.
It was so much fun, but why don't we take a listen to one of those interviews right now, Preethi? You and I can live vicariously through Angelique, who got to talk to Tiana about playing Monica Rambeau.
Okay, Tiana, all of the Monica Rambeau stands out there, we see Monica Rambeau's official debut. In earlier episodes, she was actually the Westview resident Geraldine. How excited are you for fans to discover Monica, the decorated astronaut and member of S.W.O.R.D.?
Just being able, like she's an astronaut. Like just even thinking
she's
about-
She's a whole astronaut.
A whole astronaut. When you think of Monica as a young girl and just what her aspirations were as a young Monica, and like to see it come full circle and like, oh wow, that little girl was able to accomplish aspects of her dreams and even things she didn't even know, you know? And then that whole, the thing of like following the footsteps of her mom, who's a pilot, and what that means. And that's been really, really exciting. And yeah, and she's a part of S.W.O.R.D. and, you know, her mother was director of S.W.O.R.D. for some time. And we find that out, and that it's all really exciting. And they've done so, they've put so much effort into really giving Monica a very rich history and texture within this MCU space. And I'm really excited that it's getting to kick off like with a bang, you know?
Oh, I love it. And speaking of S.W.O.R.D., Carol Danvers' best friend and Monica's mom, which we just mentioned, Maria Rambo, who we last saw in Marvel Studios' Captain Marvel, as you said, co-founded S.W.O.R.D. And it's really cool how Fury himself, like, entrusted her with this agency. Like, what does it mean for you, particularly in this creation of this mother-daughter relationship, for Monica to be able to follow in Maria's footsteps?
I think that's one of the main driving forces for Monica in WandaVision, living up to her mother's very high standards. And as you know, as we see, she loses her mom and she herself is going through her grieving process. And I also think that's a lot of what Monica connects with Wanda on, is just understanding that grief and what it means to love and to lose. And so that's definitely a driving force for Monica, making her mom proud and honoring her mom in ways that, you know, sometimes I think that's just such a big endeavor that you can also get buried in that attempt, you know, like trying to live up to someone's standards and they're not even there to tell you yes or no. So it's like you just keep driving forward to this maybe seemingly unattainable thing. And I think we see that happen for Monica and her have to reconfigure and decide how she wants to move forward and what's a healthy way to do so.
All right, so going back to Geraldine in Westview, which is how we first meet you, what has it been like juggling two characters, one in the sitcom world, navigating Westview and being friends with Wanda, and the MCU world of Monica Rambeau, and how did you approach each one of those characters?
Yeah, so for Monica Rambeau in the MCU world, like I said, I looked at Captain Marvel and in the comic books and had lots of conversations with our creatives and, you know, what is the story we're trying to tell and who is this woman years later? And for Geraldine, that was a whole other set of research, just figuring out, you know, how does a woman behave in these spaces and what are the technical aspects of the sitcom for each era, because it changes. Like, you know, in the 50s, you have the live audience and that is a whole other character. In the 60s and you in the 70s, you introduce the laugh track and having to figure out, oh, I have to pause after I say this to give space for the laugh track, that sort of thing. That was a fun challenge in creating these two very distinct characters.
Yeah, and I love that. Okay, last question. What has been your favorite part of taking on the role of one of Marvel's strongest and just like most enduring heroes?
I have loved the entire process of getting to embody and bring Monica Rambeau as an adult to WandaVision. And as we progress in the show, you do get to learn about who she is and what she's been up to in these past couple of years where we didn't see her, and how the events of like Infinity War and Endgame, like where she was and what she was doing when those things were happening and how she landed here. And so I'm excited. And yes,
I'm so excited. Thank you so much.
Make sure you're caught up with Monica Rambeau and her backstory by watching Marvel Studios' WandaVision, Captain Marvel, Avengers Infinity War, and Avengers Endgame on Disney+. And of course, you can see Monica Rambeau again in the MCU in Marvel Studios' The Marvels out this week. Tickets are on sale now, and the movie is out November 10th. Go get on it.
If you need even more Monica, which of course you do, there are comics to be read. Robin, what have you got?
All right, we are kicking things off with Monica Rambeau Photon from 2022, issue 1. I recommend starting with this entry point because I think it does a really nice job establishing Monica's backstory, power set, and also her unique family dynamic. I really enjoy seeing Monica in her element, going home, seeing her people, and definitely for newer readers or those who are unfamiliar with Monica's history, this is the place to start. And then the following comics on this list you can pick up at any point. But if you want to start from her very first appearance, that would bring us to our next recommended comic, Amazing Spider-Man Annual, issue 16. This is when Spider-Man first lays eyes on Monica Rambeau in her civilian identity as Monica. And it's here that we learn Monica's backstory in New Orleans. This is how she gets those fantastic, dynamic, electromagnetic powers. We see just what went wrong for her to get these extraordinary abilities.
And of course, what went so right for the rest of us.
So right for comic readers and fans of Monica, yeah. And we see her in her gorgeous Captain Marvel uniform for the very first time. So why not start with the first appearance?
Yeah, we got to have quite a lot of conversation about this with Angelique Roche earlier.
Was in just the thinking that.
Angelique recounted it for us in great detail, but people should just go read the original, form their own opinions.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a great scene too with her boss at the New Orleans Harbor Patrol that I just love. It's pure crackling Monica energy. Love it. Start the first appearance if you so choose. We can get into some Avengers history because, as some of you may know, Monica Rambeau, the very first human Captain Marvel, so the first citizen of Earth who was the Captain Marvel under the Captain Marvel moniker, was also a longstanding Avenger and a leader of the Avengers, too. So just like Chairwoman Wasp, Monica stepped up to the plate in Avengers 269 from that first volume in 1963. So after Wasp resigns as the Avengers chairwoman, Monica steps up to the plate, and she is a perfect fit, even if she doesn't realize it at first. But it's her fellow Avengers that nominate her and say, no, you've got it. So Monica is a prolific Avengers leader and has a longstanding history with the team. And our final recommendation on the list is Ultimates 2 from 2016. I chose this one because I really like seeing Monica with fellow cosmic players. You can also start with Ultimates from 2015, that first issue. So these are basically the protectors of the Omniverse, are these two interconnected series. So it's Monica Rambeau with Blue Marvel, Captain Marvel, Black Panther, and Miss America Chavez. They are the Ultimates, and they are on call for all manner of cosmic disasters, including helping Galactus cure his insatiable hunger. So Ultimates 2 from 2016, issue 1. And there you have it, our Marvel Unlimited reading guide for Miss Monica Rambeau.
And of course, if you didn't get a chance to take notes, we will have a link to all of these in the show notes.
Next week on Women of Marvel, we are talking about the third of the Marvels and the youngest. And Preeti, I think you like this character. I mean, I could be
just
wrong.
Just a little bit. Just wrong. A little tiny bit.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Miss Marvel herself, Kamala Khan.
Until then, Women of Marvel is produced by Isabel Robertson, Zachary Goldberg, Ellie Pyle, and Preeti Chibber.
Our senior manager of audio development is Brad Barton. Our production manager is Emily Godfrey. Our executive producer is Jill DeBoff.
Special thanks to our comics correspondent, Robin Belt.
Listen weekly on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Ellie Pyle.
I'm Preeti Chibber.
And this is Marvel,
your universe.